Welcome to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West. This week on Resounds, we're exploring the diversity of the creative process, from an exhibition of international artists to a discussion with local DIY artists and musicians.
Bree Ripley, whose voice you might recognize from news broadcasts on YPR, Phil Griffin, and Ty Herman join us to discuss their varying projects and a do-it-yourself culture in which they operate.
These young entrepreneurs are the driving force behind the arts and culture website waste-division.org, the youth advocacy group Beatnik City Council, and Richard Dryfest, a music and arts festival that recently took place in downtown Billings.
Then Robin Peterson, director of the Yellowstone Art Museum, gives us an overview of a thought-provoking exhibition on the themes of superheroes.
We have a full studio today. We have with us Ty Herman, Phil Griffin, and Bree Ripley.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for being here. Now, we have Waste Division, Beatnik City Council, Richard Dryfest, lots of things to talk about. You guys are in the middle of a lot of different things. So let's hear a little bit about what you've been up to lately.
So this can be kind of confusing because there's a lot of threads here.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces, Phil, yeah. And I think that you were one of the originators of the first part of that, correct?
Yeah. I don't remember quite how it happened. Cooper and I will argue about whose idea Waste Division was.
Is that Cooper Malin?
Cooper Malin, yep. But we just kind of had the idea to start like a website where our friends can host our art. We launched it January of this year on Inauguration Day. And it's kind of evolved since then. It started out with just us doing our own work on there, but we've kind of opened it up to submissions to serve as more of a publication and a platform for lots of different people.
Yeah, Corey and I were chatting before the interview about how it feels like an online magazine in many ways. I mean, there's a lot of modern engagement going on with blogs, and I see that you've been getting into podcasts and just a new format to get people engaged in art.
Yeah, so we had that set up, and then in spring of this year, I started talking with Austin Finn, who is a member of Idaho Green, the band. They're from here, but now in Brooklyn, about whether or not he was going to be doing Dryfest this year.
Now, Richard Dryfest is in. We just had the sixth year here in Billings.
Fifth
year of this DIY music festival that's organized all over Billings. And it seemed to have really ramped up this year with your involvement.
Yeah.
It became a lot larger than I think it had been in the past. What are your reflections on the festival?
Went well. Like, we didn't really have any big hitches or anything like that, so we were happy with that, and we had a solid turnout, pretty much what we expected, which was kind of optimistic. I wasn't sure if, like, the bottom was going to fall out of it or not, but...
Sure, because the organizers now that originated it don't even live in Billings, so somebody had to kind of hop in and take over.
Yeah, and that was pretty much me. And then I started like reaching out to people that I knew through our work with Beatnik City Council. Ty has helped me organize lots of shows, and Bree too. So
tell people how many different artists and venues happened over that weekend. I think people will be surprised what all went on.
Yeah.
Bree?
Ty is really one of the organizers for Dryfest, and I think you can really speak to just how many bands we had and just how many visual artists, poets, and comedians. You did a lot of the wig work for that.
Yeah, so we had 60 different acts across 8 different venues. The kind of the cool part about that was we really didn't do anything other than connect the dots, really. You know, put all of the acts that are kind of around locally in the same place.
Within,
places.
Like, reasonably 6 hours away, because that's reasonable for Montanans.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so that was kind of the cool part.
And then they organized crash spots. So if you did travel from over 6 hours away, Phil and Ty organized. They got volunteers to give their living rooms and couches and time and food
yards.
And yards, camping yards, and these really beautiful one-sheeters that were like welcome packages, and the zine that was like a welcome zine that was like a map of downtown Billings and all of the venues for each day, because it was both Friday and Saturday. It was a two-day event with multiple venues, so they had little drawings and little blurbs about who each act were, and it was a very welcoming gesture. I was like so surprised at just all of the different elements. And then like these one-sheeters for the traveling artists that was like, here is an invitation to come stay someplace cast-free. This house is like medium partying. This house is absolutely none of that, you know, quiet hours starting at 11, even though, you know, shows don't wrap up then. So it's a synthesis. I think there's so much creative energy among the young people here that between Phil and Ty, it was more of harness, like getting that organized.
Well, and it's billed as a DIY festival, and I'm curious what DIY means to you. Now, for folks who aren't familiar, that's a do-it-yourself. And
yeah.
I mean, I first came across this term when I was in high school listening to Fugazi, and they pushed this DIY culture out of their mom's basement of recording and releasing music on their own. And that, to me, was my first introduction to that idea that you really can get out there and do it yourself. So I'm curious what that means to you guys.
I think I want to throw that back on to you, because did you grow up in Billings, Anna?
I grew up in Wyoming, and so we definitely had to pull whatever we wanted to see, we had to create it ourselves.
And Corby, you grew up in Billings.
I did in Billings, but I think the difference, at least that I noticed, is I've been involved with institutions. So the Alberta Bear Theater, the Yellowstone Art Museum, that had established programming a year in advance. So what I noticed about the Dry Fest is it is a kind of do-it-yourself. There's a certain freedom that exists there that isn't as formal as larger institutions would do.
How does that feel?
Well, I think it appeals to that age group, both in terms of the content and in terms of the age. But then again, I went and it was a huge audience, a variety of audience. I really loved that.
We packed places. It was amazing.
I would say that for what we've seen in our poetry scene, we do attract all ages. I mean, we've had four generations of folks attend a poetry event at once. And so getting to collaborate with Dry Fest and do a poetry jam where we paired musicians and poets created something that we hadn't quite seen in Billings.
Yeah, Anna, you were an organizer for the poetry event with Dry Fest. It was really cool to have you on board to help spearhead that first initiative to get something more than just music.
Yeah, and more than just poetry. And we do a lot of performance poetry in Billings, and we have, in certain occasions, mixed things up. But I felt like we had the largest audience I had seen for something of that nature. We were in a new venue downtown that no one had really been introduced to. So we have a ton of stuff happening in Billings and opportunities to showcase that in places I hadn't seen.
After hearing how you guys perceive DIY, I think Phil has a really good take on that.
I was going to kind of tell about like where this DIY relationship started for me, which was when I was in middle school and high school, mostly high school. There was no place for us to hang out and like play music or go to shows and like kind of have fun. So luckily I had a friend whose mom was okay with us setting up in his garage. So we just throw what we called garage shows and organize the bands, like our friends' bands or people that we'd heard of with bands in different high schools. And we just organized the shows ourselves. And that was because of a lack of spaces for us to do that. So we kind of, with a lack of venues, had to think sort of in an innovative fashion about what venues could work, even though they're not usually used that way. So we ended up using the Annex Coffee House and Bakery for a rock venue, which they had never had happen. And that ended up going well. Discontent, we use them as a rock, or kind of a softer venue, but they don't have live music in there usually. So there's kind of a, with the DIY thing, you work with what you have and just try to make it happen and kind of go on the fly and feel out your options. Right. And that's the freedom you're talking about, I think.
And Bree, I remember the first Beatnik City Council event was actually in the Northern Parking Garage, on top of the parking garage. So there was poetry and music. You were outdoors, Definitely not a traditional stage.
Not at all. No. And I mean, that was my first time talking in front of people, because my job is typically talking to people but not looking at them. So that was really fun to be able to engage with faces and to see crowds. I think what was really exciting about that is when we formed Beatnik City Council, I guess like the origin story for this is that Urban Arts Platform event, our very first event as a council, was an experiment. And it was a totally, we have no idea what we're doing, but we're going to meet every week at this time at Ebon Coffee Shop, kind of like an episode of Gilmore Girls, and just hash it out. And we're going to ask for help when we need help. And we got incredible advisors.
And I love the economics of it all, too, because I'm really happy that I have a ticket to Bonnie Raitt, but it was $99.
Right, yeah.
And I think when you're in high school or college and you want to just be around music and art, there shouldn't really be a price tag to that.
No, absolutely not. I think that's one of the reasons why we formed Beatnik City Council. I think that is absolutely part of our vision and the spirit of our group. I first moved here a year ago this month to Billings, Montana, and I stumbled into the rail yard to see Richard Dreyfuss 4. And then a few months later, you know, I met Phil because I interviewed him here for a story about how he came back from Standing Rock and was like, I'm a white person. I should not be here right now. This is my feelings. He wrote an incredible essay about it. And it was published by Last Best News. And that's how I found Waste Division. And that's how, you know, then I met Ty organically because he was my coffee hookup bud that I'd hang out with at Ebon. And when we all just kind of like were thinking about it, we were like, what do we want from this place that it's not giving us right now? And how can we share that with as many people who might be underserved as possible?
Well, and getting engaged in what the community is doing and showing up to city council meetings and understanding the working underpinnings of our community and seeing something that you want and creating it. I mean, that is the ultimate DIY.
And that's kind of something that I wanted to point out about DIY kind of methodology, is that since we don't have an institution overhead, we don't have connections that we can tap into through that institution. So we kind of just have to use what we can pick up. Like the thing with DIY is that we're young and not really professional, but as soon as you just decide to get on the ground and like set a goal to meet once a week and
not be shy,
and try
show
to,
up.
Right.
Showing up and being on time is like the, I mean, that is like the only thing I think you need in the very beginning. As soon as we did that.
Yeah. And then we started talking and brainstorming ideas. And then once you kind of get on the ground and start figuring out what you do have at your disposal, you can start making connections between people and tasks. And
like we inevitably used Waste. We will always use Waste Division as a way to have immediate press about whatever something or another we have going on as Beatnik City Council. It's like we already have a built-in media platform that people are paying attention to.
And that was kind of an accident.
Like that was a total accident.
I just happened to be working on this website, and then Dreyfuss came up and was like, oh, well, we have this platform. We should use this to publish all our artist interviews, podcasts, or whatever we needed to publish.
Yeah, it is a super modern way to get, you know, the word out about events, especially because there's so much noise and it's hard to pay attention to everything that's happening. And so for you to have so many different platforms on which you reach out just connects those dots even further.
It's a lot of opportunity for escapism.
Well, we're curious, what's up next? What are you most excited about coming up within the next few months or even next year? I hear Mr. Dreyfuss will even be attending next year.
Yeah, that is...
Dreyfuss might be attending.
That's an asterisk.
It's real.
Stay tuned.
We are pinning down the true. It's very real. He did say yes.
You have it on record.
Mm-hmm. It is there.
It is, yeah. But yeah, so what's next for us is we're going to keep doing shows at least once a month.
Yeah, well, we have one coming up that I wanted to make sure we mentioned. Smiling Dog Records, September 24th. It's a Sunday. There's a really cool band called Tenement coming through town that I had a buddy ask if we could help him out with a show. And so after Dreyfuss, we kind of had a big lull because that was like what we'd been working on all summer. But now that show came down, and we're just going to keep putting on shows at least. There's been some talk of TV show on community.
We're throwing that around.
So I would suggest, because things are always DIY and in flux, the best place to go is to your website. You will always have the most current information there about mm-hmm. what's happening, whether it's planned months in advance or the day before.
I mean, like, very simply, everything that we have planned will go on the Beatnik City Council Facebook page and the Waste Division website. Like, that's where you can get all of the information. It's there. But, like, solid concrete things that we have in the works include, like, we want to have workshops. We want to have kind of, like, master artist classes where people from around the state and from northern Wyoming can, like, get together, and then we can, like, hype this and promote this, and they can share that knowledge, and we can share that with as many different types of people as possible. We, as friends, are committed to having a really fun time, and we want to invite so many different types of people as possible. But what we really love is knowledge, civics, and sharing with art, because I think that that's how we can really feel each other and really get to know our neighbors.
Well, and there's a connectivity going on because you're bringing in bands and artists from Missoula. We're bringing in the Bozeman Poetry Collective to collaborate on work going on in Billings. So we're seeing those lines getting connected. And I really thank you for your advocacy and your work and being here with us and talking about what's going on.
We appreciate the energy.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
For decades, popular culture has been fascinated by superheroes, their superhuman capacity, their desire for truth and justice, and their ability to save the day. Their storylines have captivated many, and the imagination has become the stuff of contemporary idols throughout the world. My Hero Contemporary Art and Superhero Action is a new exhibit that's just opened at the Yellowstone Art Museum in Billings and is on display to the end of the year. With us is Robin Peterson, director of the Yellowstone Art Museum. Welcome, Robin.
Thanks, Corby. Glad to be here.
So what an interesting exhibit.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a rather successful opening last night. It's demonstrated what we hoped would happen, is that it has a real appeal and kind of an elemental draw.
I was so interested in that there were so many families there and lots
sure.
of kids.
Yeah.
And yet the exhibit also is fabulous artwork, really an incredible variety of both medium and styles mm-hmm. From really all over the United States and the world.
Right, and it's not a superhero show in the sense that we're seeing comic strips or graphic novels. This is a collection of work by contemporary artists who have taken the superhero idea and in some respects kind of turned it on its head and examined its the holes in its formerly flawless veneer and mm-hmm. Just kind of taken a look at the more human side of what the whole notion of heroism means.
Well, let's talk about some of the iconic pieces that are in the show. I had some of my favorites. Maybe you could talk about some of yours.
Well, I think what interests me most about this work is that the whole notion of a hero, as it's expressed in comic books, came about at a time when we were striving to express in certain cultural medias real clear black and white notions of right and wrong and ideals that were being presented. And the initial comic book superheroes, the Batmans and the Supermans and so forth, were an idealized notion of a human being. And is noted by the curator of this exhibition alongside one of the shows that this idealized man was put forward as kind of the apex of morality, as she says. And this exhibition kind of delves a little more deeply into that. And many of the artists sort of strip away that polish uh-huh. and show you that, well, all these people are based on humanity, and humanity is fundamentally flawed. So let's take a look at those flaws. So
some of the drawings and photographers in the show think about what are superheroes like as they get older.
Yeah,
we don't imagine them older.
Right, dropping their groceries in the parking lot of the grocery store, and aging and losing their fitness. And yeah, some of the pieces do examine that, and that those are the more poignant ones than the kind of ambiguous critical approach that some of the artists have taken. Others are just plain silly.
Right.
They just poke fun at the whole notion of heroism by turning them into toys, essentially.
There's a wonderful Scandinavian artist that has people just dressed up as Superman on a hill thinking, I wish I could fly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was really touched by it. It's a very kind of pale photograph, but you really feel the emotion in that.
Well, as you were mentioning earlier, most of these characters were born, in essence, during the interwar period when we were looking for ways to accomplish certain rather ambitious goals with regard to the world and the country's growing role in the world. And some of the superheroes exemplify this idea that, you know, we couldn't find some solutions in reality, but the superheroes have the solutions. Remember, too, that each one has a flaw. Mm-hmm. Each one has a weakness that brings it back. We just can't seem to create a genuinely idealized and perfect entity.
Well, the way we sort of think about Batman, who is a homeless child.
Right, right.
And what he does and why he does that, I've always thought there's different characteristics of all those different superheroes that people emote with.
Well, I think it's the weaknesses that give them their humanity and make it possible for us actually to connect some of them.
Most of the work, it's interesting, the initial inspiration for the work we talked about coming from the 30s to the 60s, but the work in this show is all contemporary work.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see some of the tongue-in-cheek, some of the appropriation of earlier art and art forms. You see some of the irony that doesn't really mark the art of the periods when these superheroes were, so to speak, invented. Mm-hmm. So it's a much more nuanced and ambiguous approach to the whole idea of heroism.
We're talking with Robin Peterson from the Yellowstone Art Museum, and the exhibit on display now is called My Hero, Contemporary Art and Superhero Action. Robin, one of the pieces that I thought was one of the strongest in terms of, I hate to say contemporary art or modern art, are those beautiful cement figures.
Yeah, the cast concrete.
Based on Chinese dynasty tomb sculptures with a Batman mask.
Right, and you think about it, those were also guardians. You know, their original function for the Chinese figures was as warriors and guardians, which is very much in the mode of a superhero. And of course, the Chinese were an army of them, and the superhero tends to work alone or have a single sidekick. So it is interesting to see that, taking the notion of the armor itself and the costume being part of how a superhero is identified, just making a few small tweaks to it and then just launching it centuries into the future and making a connection.
Right. That sculpture had its own gestalt. It was just this fabulous.
Yeah,
no,
it's very
image.
It's very looming, and it's got that, you know, that kind of dark ash gray finish to it that reminds you very much of the whole Batman sequence of costumes.
The other thing that I thought was interesting is there are a lot of ethnic artists representing different cultures. The one that I was taken with was a Chicano artist that did images of real life people dressed as Wonder Woman and Batman doing manual labor. And then the captions all talk about how much money they're sending back home.
Well, again, it's changing their whole notion of what heroism means and what the ordinary person does that can very much be interpreted as heroic but goes without notice. And the contrast between that and our whole idea of superheroes, which generally pivot around saving the entire world in a single strike, and the heroism of the ordinary person being carried out on a daily, repetitive basis.
Right. So there's a lot in the show that make you think about
what is a superhero?
Yeah.
That those particular photographs made me think, how is a superhero? I mean, most of the superheroes are white people.
Originally, yeah.
And
the white men originally.
And how is that then used by another culture or appropriated by another culture to have meaning? Mm-hmm. And certainly that example was so poignant to think about all the laborers, manual laborers mm-hmm. doing very simple jobs, saving money, and they become a superhero, you know, for their family, for their culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's nothing unusual about superheroes having animal attributes or animal parallel beings, but the idea of a superhero being non-white or being female took a while to mm-hmm. take root, and it's still something that's developing, and some of the artists draw attention to that in satiric and very pointed ways right. in some of these works.
I think it's so interesting that Wonder Woman is the most popular film of the year.
I think this says something perhaps a little alarming about our culture, that we desperately try so hard to identify heroes, right. even if we have to create them.
It also might speak volumes about the people that are making the movies
sure.
and Hollywood mm-hmm. in terms of it, thinking that Robert Downey Jr. is the only one that will make $1 million in opening weekend. And here's mm-hmm. Wonder Woman that just surpasses mm-hmm. you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of humor in the show, too.
Yes, it's often ironic humor or it's kind of backhanded, but definitely there.
If you have no other reason to go to the show, you must see Batman and Robin Williams. Just a wonderful parody mm-hmm. and a lot of fun. So mm-hmm. throughout the show, there is a mixture of humor, of design, social commentary, and really is work from all over the U.S.
And beyond. Oh, yes. It's an international group. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Again, just going back to, there's so much rich material in the idea of exploring vulnerability and just the fragility of human life and human society, which these single heroes are set up to protect over and over and over, yet they still keep having to come back and protect over and over and over because of the forces of evil are so prevalent.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when I heard about the show, in my mind I was thinking it was all going to be Roy Lichtenstein.
Oh, no.
I mean,
no.
That all big, bold, primary colors. Mm-hmm. And I thought, because that's really the comic book
exactly.
version.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about the show is the variety of the medium that's used.
Right. Some of the materials are, some of the compositions are very dense and layered. The media used are extremely diverse. There's sculptural work. There's two-dimensional work. Painting, printmaking, collage.
Knitting,
yes, exactly.
Which was really fascinating.
If you've got your, at home, you've got a 9-foot person, we may be able to fit that costume on somebody.
Well, speaking of costumes, you also have a big celebration coming up
we
at
do.
The Art Museum.
Our costume ball masquerade party is coming up at the end of October. So, and tickets just went on sale for that. Members first.
Oh, that's right. I got to get back and yeah. get my ticket. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting, and it certainly is. Here you have the superhero show, which I think may be one of your most popular shows of the year.
Well,
once the
so.
Word gets out yeah. and people see mm-hmm. it. But isn't it fascinating how people love to dress up mm-hmm. in costume?
Mm-hmm. They want to be somebody else for a while.
And what is the date of the masquerade?
October 28th.
October 28th. And will the show be up at the same time?
Yes, it will. The show is up through the end of the year.
My Hero, Contemporary Art and Superhero Action is an exhibit that's at the Yellowstone Art Museum, and it will be there through
January 2nd.
Through January 2nd. So, Robin, it has been a delight
yes,
chatting
thank you.
With you
appreciate
about
the invitation.
This.
Yeah.
And I encourage people to get to Billings at the Yellowstone Art Museum. My Hero, Contemporary Art and Superhero Action.
You've been listening to Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains, produced by Anna Page, Corby Skinner, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Hear this program anytime online at ypradio.org.